Ramsey TV.
It is truly amazing, isn't it, ladies and gentlemen, this entire deception we have been talking about. And thank you for all your comments. I am on a hot topic. This is huge because this is the difference between God being God and humanity becoming its own God and dictating to the God what will happen. It is the most insidious form of humanism in that it is disguised. It is presented as a great thing. Well, it's no wonder because Satan himself is disguised today as a messenger of light and his minions as dispensers of righteousness. And they're posing as Christians. They use the name of Christ. It is just everywhere. And it appeals the free will. Of course, it appeals to humanity because humanity wants to be its own God. So this is very popular. Naturally, it just takes hold. It takes hold. The sovereignty of God is not wanted. That teaching is not accepted. This is what Paul says in 2 Timothy chapter 4 when he's saying that they heap up for themselves teachers in accord with their own desires. That God is operating all in accord with the counsel of his will is not what people desire. And so deluded are they, and so proud, it's the pride, that I'm going to go to Romans chapter 3 again. I got a lot to do today, a lot to do. I'm going to go to Romans chapter 3 and show you how the common Christian interprets Romans chapter 3. It's incredible. But first, I'd like to recognize a gift I was sent. Someone sent me this Donald Trump $100 bill. It's not real. You can't really spend this. What it is it's a wallet. Look, you open it up. You open them up and you put some stuff in there, like money. And then in the back, you put your ID in here, I guess. So, yes, it says Federal Reserve Not up there. Federal Reserve Not. So, thank you for this gift. You know who you are, Deborah. I appreciate it. All right, now, Romans chapter 3. How in the world can people read these plain statements and not get it? It is because of the blindness. The adversary, Satan, has blinded the apprehensions of the unbelieving. Notice these people are unbelievers. For years, I was told that, Martin, anyone who believes in free will, it's just a doctrinal flaw. They're not unbelievers. They just are confused. But confusion is the name of Satan's game. He blinds the apprehensions. Martin, they're just blinded. Yes, of course, that is Satan's tool. And he blinds the apprehensions of the unbelieving so that the illumination of the glory of God does not irradiate them. And so I now believe, and I've been teaching for years, that anyone who believes in free will is not saved. They do not have aeonian life. And this works for both the circumcision and the uncircumcision evangel. And many times I've quoted to you Romans 10, when Paul says, concerning the Jews, seeking to establish their own righteousness. Let me just go there real quick in Romans 10. Paul says, I am testifying to them. And this testimony from Paul about the Jews could very well apply to Christianity. Listen to this. I am saying to them that they have a zeal of God, but not in accord with recognition. Right? This is all the retaining truth in injustice. For they, being ignorant of the righteousness of God, are seeking to establish their own righteousness and were not subject to the righteousness of God. To me, this is the scriptural definition of human free will. It is ignorance of the righteousness of God. That is a serious sin. And anyone who thinks that their eternal destiny is up to them is way, way ignorant of the righteousness of God. For they, being ignorant of the righteousness of God and seeking to establish their own righteousness, this is exactly what Christianity is doing, and every single religion on the planet, seeking to establish their own righteousness, being able to choose to overcome ironclad scriptures that no one is righteous, no one is seeking out God, being able to somehow overcome that ironclad decree of God is a great feat of righteousness. As I said yesterday in the parable, it amounts to the victims in the house somehow clawing their way out of that burning house to make it to God, who is a gentleman parked outside, refuses to go in and get them. That would violate their free will. So he waits for them. That is truly the establishment of one's own righteousness. They clawed their way out as opposed to other people who could not. That's why they're going to heaven. They clawed their way out. Other people either didn't have the resources, didn't have enough desire, didn't have enough information, didn't have enough oomph, or whatever they say it takes. But that is nothing less than establishing one's own righteousness. And the result of that, of course, is not being not subject to the righteousness of God. Because this is so true. Listen to this. Wow. The seeking of one's own righteousness and the hope to establish, it's a very strong word in Romans 10:3. The seeking to establish one's own righteousness actually blinds one to the righteousness of God. It actually blinds you to it. This is why you can't see it. This is why I said concerning Marie in Lima, Peru, is that their default setting is free will. And so because they're clawing their way out of the burning building, they cannot see the righteousness of God. They're obstructed. Their view is obstructed by this vast struggle to attain their own righteousness. So people who believe in free will are saved in the end, but they do not have aeonian life. See ya at the great white throne. You're going to be dead. You're going to be killed during the tribulation if you're alive at that time. Probably, chances are, and we won't see you again until the great white throne. You will have missed the 1,000-year kingdom. This is just the way it is. It's just the way it is. This is why we herald. This is why I herald. Because faith comes by hearing. Hearing by a declaration of God. And how can they hear unless someone is sent to them to proclaim the gospel? And how can they be sent if they are not commissioned? I am a man commissioned by God. Not by an institution. Not by a theological seminary. But by God to bring you. If anyone is hearing this for the first time, bring you this truth. That it is the righteousness of God that saves, not your own righteousness. And I pray to God that today God plugs you into that. And then truly you will have aeonian life. Only God can give you the belief that it takes to overcome this widespread tsunami of self-righteousness that is whitewashed with the fine theological term human free will. How do they get out of Romans chapter 3? It's just this. Paul says, we charge both Jews and Greeks to be all under sin, according as it is written, not one is just, not even one. Martin, how do they get out of that? Not one is just, not even one. They get out of it by, they somehow read that, and in their minds, this is where the filter comes in. In their minds, they read it as, well, some are a little bit just. They absolutely do not include themselves in this. They can't, or they couldn't believe in free will. They do not, they read this, and the blinders are on, God did it, yes. But they just don't believe it. Because they think, they translate that in their mind to, they translate, not one is just, not even one, they translate it as, well, some are a little bit just. Not one is understanding, Paul says in Romans 3:12. Well, some are understanding. That's how they read it. Not one is seeking out God. This is how they read it. Well, some are seeking out God. So when Paul says, you know, we're dead in trespasses and sins, it's like, well, we're not quite dead. We're almost dead. It's like this almost dead, almost all are not seeking God. Almost all are under sin. Almost all are avoiding Him. But we are the special people who have, by our own devices, our own creativity, our own zeal, our own imaginative techniques, we have somehow been able to escape this decree on all humanity that Paul is making here in Romans chapter 3. We have somehow managed to escape it. And ironically, they give God credit for it, but that's a Hollywood wall. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. All avoid him. No, some are avoiding him. We manage to seek him. There are some parallel passages I want to give you before I go to the biggie. This is the biggie. I might get here today because I stopped short yesterday and the day before of going to Romans 1:18. I might have to make this a separate show. This is phenomenal. I didn't get there. I left off with alleging themselves to be wise. I left off, that's Romans 1:22, alleging themselves to be wise. They are made stupid, and they change the glory of the incorruptible God into the likeness of an image of a corruptible human being. I didn't tell you what happens after that. What happens after that is absolutely incredible, and it is documented. You can see it. You don't need empirical evidence. It's just in front of your face. It is why Christians are some of the most, again, self-righteous, snobby, and sinning people. This, it'll explain it, and it'll explain why those who have escaped any contact at all with the Christian religion are actually better off morally. I contend to you, and I've contended this for years, that most of the sin in the world, I mean, I know sin comes through Adam, but I say that wherever Christianity touches, wherever anyone has heard of the God of Christianity, who is an evil, vindictive, petty, madman, tormentor, anyone who has heard of that, the reaction to it is to become angry, to want to not have anything to do with that God whatsoever, and then to dive headlong into the world as a way of flipping the bird to that God. Oh yeah? You're going to be that way? You're going to send me to hell for doing something wrong and then call it grace? Huh, we'll see about that. And boom, into the world. Wherever Christianity touches, there is infestations of sin. And you would think it's just the opposite. You would think the opposite. That's the way Christianity advertises it. And I'm going to tell you what Janet told me. This is very interesting what she said about those who believe in free will and those who don't believe in free will. But I think Janet's coming along. But what she said is the exact opposite of the truth. I'm going to get there. Could be today. Might have to save it till tomorrow. I'm going to begin in Romans 1:24. You can go there ahead of time. You can get there ahead of me if you want. But I'm telling you, I'm going to lay it out for you tomorrow. But I got a parallel passage to this human weakness that is so important to understand. Human inability to attain to the righteousness of God. It's 1 Corinthians 4, verse 7. Paul says, who is making you to discriminate? And this is what I'm talking about in Romans 3. Christians are discriminating between themselves and the rest of humanity. They're discriminating. They're different. They're better. They're a breed apart. They're able. Not all are unrighteous. They have a little bit of righteousness by God, they can get out of that burning building. They're discriminating. Paul says, who is making you to discriminate? I'll tell you who's doing it. And it's a rhetorical question. It's Satan. Satan is bolstering their egos, bolstering their opinions of themselves and their quest for self-righteousness. Who's making you to discriminate? Again, I'm on 1 Corinthians 4, 7. Now, what have you which you did not obtain? There it is. What do you have that you did not obtain? This goes along with Acts 17:25. God gives to all life and breath and all. Again, gives the active verb. And Acts 17:28, in him we are living and moving and are. Paul verifies this. A third witness for you in 1 Corinthians 4, 7. What do you have which you did not obtain? That is, did not get. What do you have? Faith? A car? A house? a sense of humor, a wife, a child. Okay, put it all on a list, what you have. Breath? What do you have that you did not obtain? That is, you got it from without. And that is the only way you can get anything from without. Of course, doing away with the God is a gentleman lie. What do you have that you did not obtain? Now, if you obtained it, also, why are you boasting as though not obtaining? Beautiful, Paul. Just beautiful. If you obtained it, that is, if you really do grasp this truth, why are you boasting as though not obtaining? Therefore, the corollary here, the logical corollary, is those who are boasting in any sort of attainment do not realize that they have obtained it. They think it's self-generated. And don't be tricked by the absence of overt boasting, because boasting doesn't need to be overt. You can tell, because many in religion who are proud of their religious accomplishments, they like to cover it. They like to put a sheen of humility on it. There's a sheen of humility, just like the Pharisees, right? They walked about. They never raised their voices. They were very pious. They looked that way. They were dressed nicely, and they were always in control. And yet there was the looking down on others. I thank God that I'm not like that sinner. So there is the sheen put on it, but there is boasting. And whenever boasting is present, and really this thought that I'm going, that God sends other people to hell because they didn't choose Christ, sown into that statement is boasting. You can't help it. If somebody is in hell for eternity because they didn't believe in God, and it's your thought that they're in there because of their own inability, they rejected Christ. Of course they're in hell. They rejected Christ. Ooh, you can't help but say, I'm going to heaven because I didn't reject Christ. That is self-righteousness. And it is the ticket to aeonian death. What do you have that you did not obtain? Beautiful. And Romans 11:34. This is a classic. Not many people have heard this verse ever. Who knew the mind of the Lord? Who became his advisor? Who gives to him first and it will be repaid him? Who gives to God first? Do we give to something to God first? It goes back to Acts 17, where Paul says that God is not requiring anything. God doesn't require anything. Who is giving to God? Let's start with verse 34. This is brilliant. For who knew the mind of the Lord, or who became his advisor? Oh, there it is. Who's going to have the audacity to say that they advise God? Well, if you're going to say you advised God of something he didn't know about, to advise God is to tell him something that he was not aware of. And I think many people pray this way. Like, God, can't you see the situation over here? And they're praying as though they're telling God something that he doesn't know. Who became his advisor, or who gives to him first and it will be repaid him? Who gives anything to God first and then God swings it around and brings it back? Outrageous thought. Seeing that out of him, through him, and for him is all. Some people have told me the all there doesn't mean all. But the proof that it does mean all is the previous statements here, that the only way this could not be all that is out of God, the only way it could not be all, is if there is someone who advises God, someone who gives something to God first, something who gives something to God that he doesn't have. Only if there's someone who can give something to God that he doesn't already have, only then could not all be of God, because Paul is using that. He's using that rhetorical question, who gave anything to God first, to prove that all is out of God. All is out of God. Well, how do we know that all is all? Because the only alternative is somebody gives something to God first. Impossible, I hope you know. All right. Yeah, I look like I'm going to have to save Romans 1. When I go back there, save it for tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be a hell of a revelation. Before I close here, I hope that I've given you those key verses and that you will remember them. I finally got them straightened out as to which verses belong where. God gives to all life and breath and all. Acts 17, verse 25. And in Him we are living and moving and are. Now, I was studying this a few years ago, and I discovered something. I don't know if I'm a pioneer here. I might be, because I've never read this anywhere. I noticed that these are triplets. So why is it a triplet? I mean, I like the artisticness of threes. Anything, if you look at a good painting, things tend to be grouped in threes. It's very unpleasant to the eye to see two things opposing, just two. Three adds a balance to it. It takes it from a two dimension to a third dimension. It takes it from two dimensionality to third dimensionality. If I can use a five syllable word. Oh, hell, that's a six syllable word. Life and breath and all. God gives. This is again the active word. God gives to all life and breath and all. Paul begins with that in Acts 17:25. And then in verse 28, he says, in Him we are living and moving and are. I said, is there a relationship between God giving to all life and breath and all, and in Him we're living and moving and are? And I saw it. I was like, ding! Yes. The first triplet is God's, from God's direction into humanity. It is God giving to an inert humanity everything that it needs. God gives to all life and breath and all. That's in Acts 17:25. Now in Acts 17:28, we're looking at it from the human perspective, and we see now the result of God giving to all life and breath and all. The result of God giving life and breath and all to all is that all are living, moving, and are in Him. This is great. I'm going to show it to you on my notepad here, if I can figure out how to do this. Great. God gives life. There it is. God gives life. The people to whom God gives life are living. The people to whom God gives breath are, what is that word? Moving. And the people to whom God gives all are. The King James says, in Him we have our being. So this side is from the God part. God, this is what God gives. Life, breath, all. And this is the result that we manifest or that we experience. We're living. Why are we living? Oh, because God gives life. That one's pretty obvious. I think that's what gave me the clue that, okay, if that one is such a perfect parallel, then these other two must fall in place, and they do. And when we realize they fall in place, it gives us further illumination into the great majesty and the great allness of God and our helplessness apart from Him. God gives breath. And you know, we can't move without breath. We die without breath. That word says moving. And I can't even read my own handwriting. That says moving, okay? So the people to whom God gives breath are moving. And I said yesterday that if God gives you your breath, and if the breath supplies the moving, then God is responsible for the moving. People say, you mean when I flick my finger, God... So it's like, people think they're going to come up with the tiniest thing, and I'm finally going to say, okay, God's not in charge of that. You're right, God's not in charge of that. You mean when I do my finger like this, God knew I was going to do that? No, God not only knew you were going to do that, but He made you do it. That doesn't sound like human free will. It's not. It's called God gives to all breath, and the people who are breathing are moving. Moving. In Him we move. This is first grade material right here. This is first grade material. And how crazy that the great doctors and the great accomplished scholars of Christianity don't have this first grade knowledge. This is a tribute to the diabolical lies of Satan. It is amazing how so many illustrious scholars can be blinded to baby truth. This is baby truth. This is why Jesus said, become as a child to enter the kingdom of God. And why Paul says God chooses the unwise, weak, ignoble, and stupid to give his truths to. This is why Jesus called to him fishermen and tax collectors and prostitutes and drinkers and party people, because they said, give us the truth. And he put it to them in simple terms. God gives to all life and breath and all. Well, that was Paul to the Athenian philosophers. But Jesus, of course, the same thing. Simple truths, reliance on God, no self-righteousness, no attainment. And then God gives to all those to whom God, remember this is the God column, those to whom God gives all are. This R, when you read this R, I want you to think of existence. Your existence is a result of God giving you all. So you might say that this goes from more specific, like almost like a first step into the broader scope of things. Your life is from God, thus you are living. Your breath is from God, thus you are moving. Your all is from God, thus you are. God's a gentleman? God's a gentleman? If God stopped giving for a second, you would die. If God removed himself from your life, and even the life of an atheist, for a fraction of a second, they would die. And yet, the religious among us believe that God not only withdraws himself for a second, but he withdraws himself for a great period of time. No, all the time. All the time he withdraws himself. And not only do the Christians not die when that happens, but they march. They become great. They somehow manage to do these amazing works for God, and they give them to him. They become God's advisors. Look what we did. They give something to God that he didn't have before. What is that? Their faith. God, I have a gift to you, for you. I have a present I'm going to give to you that you didn't have before. Oh, really? I'm very interested in this. What could it be? Lord, it's my faith. And the true God says, I've seen that before. I gave it to you, numbnuts. They don't believe it. They don't believe it. But by the grace of God, we believe it. And in Romans 11:32 is the great verse, the great unknown associated with Romans 11:34. That is that God, the giver, locks up all in stubbornness. Locks up, including us. We were once locked up in stubbornness. The religious world is presently locked up in stubbornness. But the purpose of that is so that God can have mercy on all. And that is the second part of that work of God. The deliverance, the eventual deliverance of the creature from the bondage of inability and corruption. And you and I, ladies and gentlemen, we are the first. We are pioneers. We are the first, and so are the first century saints, Paul and the rest, to experience a deliverance from ourselves. And accompanying that is none other than the knowledge that God is operating all in accord with the counsel of his will, and that nothing that we have was not given to us first by him. This is the beginning of wisdom.